to get to Iowa. We'll leave it there for now. Thanks both to Jerry Baker and to Katie Balls, both of whom were in Davos this week. Probably wanted to be in Dallas instead. Anyway, here's a reminder that they've got a new podcast, The State of It, USA, and it launches this Wednesday coming. Jerry Baker, Katie Balls, The State of It, USA, on Wednesday. Well, that's it from me. Thanks all for your company today and listening all week. Aisha Hazarika is on this slot from 1 o'clock tomorrow. My producer was Lizzie Highfield, and Ryan Boyden was pressing the buttons. On the Times at One next week, it's me old mate, Joe Coburn. Joe Co will be here. But right now, coming up on Times Radio, get ready for Fee Glover and Jane Garvey next.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Andrew. And it's 2 o'clock. It is Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. We're here on Times Radio until four.
And in the next 2 hours, has Donald Trump actually changed the world or just chickened out with world leaders gathering to discuss the last few days? We're going to be hearing from the Times' Bruno Waterfield, but we're going to start the show with a completely different question. Are your children getting the food they need at school? Campaigners will tell us why they think standards aren't good enough. Our big interview after 3:30 is with the unstoppable Carol Vorderman, and we'll bring you the very latest Oscar news too. Darling, 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 I'm sure you're nominated.
Well, no news so far, but everything crossed. I don't think they've quite finished. Let's get the news at two. Andy Hayes.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The head of NATO, Mark Rutte, has denied Donald Trump made a U-turn in his desire to take over Greenland. Last night, the US president said he was dropping the threat of tariffs against countries that disagree with his plans. Rutte says he and Trump have been talking about this for some time.
Over the year, he and I had discussions on this, and yesterday we discussed how can we now tackle this for once and for all, making sure that the Russians and the Chinese, his vision, for them not to gain access to the Arctic region, Greenland, but also the wider Arctic, including the US with Alaska. And then it was clear for both of us that NATO has to play a role here.
Keir Starmer's hosting the Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen at Chequers. Donald Trump has withdrawn his threat of tariffs if countries, including Britain, fail to back him over Greenland. The Prime Minister is claiming some of the credit for that.
In terms of recent developments and the withdrawal of the threat of tariffs, I see that as a reflection of pragmatism, common sense and sticking to our values and our principles. The hard yards now finding a way, better way forward on the issue that we all agree on, which is security in the Arctic.
A so-called master plan for the rebuilding of Gaza has been unveiled at the launch of Donald Trump's Board of Peace in Davos. The US president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has shown off proposed designs for the reconstruction of the heavily bombed enclave. In one image, blocks along the Mediterranean coast show a dedicated area for coastal tourism. Andrew Gwynne, a former health minister who lost the Labour whip over offensive WhatsApp messages, is expected to announce, possibly this afternoon, that he's standing down as an MP. If he does, it could clear the way for the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, to return to the House of Commons. More details from The Times' assistant political editor, Jerry Scott.
The rules of the National Executive Committee say that if you are a directly elected mayor, you have to have express permission to stand as a candidate in the Westminster elections. Now, of course, Andy Burnham could technically circumvent that rule by just resigning as mayor and no longer being the mayor. But the NEC would still have to approve the final candidate for the seat.
29 council elections in England, due to be held in May, have been suspended. The local government secretary, Steve Reid, says it's part of plans to merge district and county authorities. He says the vast majority of polls are still going ahead, but his Tory counterpart says the scale and scope of the cancellations is unprecedented. And a tearful Liz Hurley has told the High Court she felt crushed by the press's invasion of her privacy. The actress alleges the publisher of the Daily Mail tapped her landlines and placed microphones on her windows to get stories. Tories. She's one of seven claimants, including Prince Harry, who accuse Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering, something it denies. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Well, welcome to Thursday afternoon. It's just coming up to 4 minutes past two. Fee Glover and Jane Garvey with you until 4 o'clock this afternoon. On the way, school meals. It's a way to help kids from disadvantaged backgrounds. But how many are getting their daily nutrients from what is on offer in the school canteen? That's where we're going to start. And if you're thinking, I've heard that story before, well, you're not wrong. It is one of those stories that just seems to come back and back and back because the problem doesn't seem to get solved. Oh my God, I can't believe it's me. Yes, it is that time of year again when actors who've been in hair and makeup for days seem surprised that they've won an award that they've been nominated for months. All the fun of the Oscar season is underway. Some hugely important and beautiful films up for grabs. Hamnet is one of them, directed by Chloe Zhao, a previous Oscar-winning director. High hopes on all fronts there. Is Marty supreme? Has it been nominated in the gong section yet?
Well, certainly Timothée is nominated as Best Actor. Paul Mescal, by the way, has not had a nomination for his role in Hamlet.
Oh, yeah. But Jesse Buckley has.
Jesse Buckley has.
Yeah.
And so has Kate Hudson for, I thought, a brilliant film, Song Sung Blue, but she's really good, Kate Hudson. Yeah.
Sinners is sweeping the nominations as well, so we've got plenty to talk about there. We seek them here, we seek them there, those shy old Democrats. Many Americans want to see them, if not everywhere, then at least somewhere. And now doesn't seem to be the time to do a Scarlet Pimpernel. We have found a Democrat who's going to tell us where opposition to DJT is coming from. After 3:30, a stellar guest to end our week.
Well, following David Baddiel talking about his love of cats was always going to be difficult. So we've had to go high octane and we've called up a showbiz pal who's going to fill the void somehow this afternoon or attempt to. And it's only Carol Vorderman. Wow, Carol Vorderman. She's 65 and she's here to tell us all about her approach to midlife. She, Fee, is embracing it. She's got some thoughts on politics as well. So and they're interesting. She's not really, well, she wasn't a fan of the previous Tory government. Indeed, that's what got her the sack from the BBC for the second time, as she reveals in the pre-recorded conversation I had with her a little earlier. But now she's not that sold on Keir Starmer either. I tell you, she really doesn't like Farage. Not keen on Nigel Farage at all. So anyway, Carol Vorderman with us. Her nickname at university was Boots Vorderman, because she attended lectures at Cambridge in thigh-length leather boots.
Good for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's something for everybody in that interview.
Well, I've tried to cover all the Times Radio bases.
I think
Nigel Farage, thigh-length boots, Labour government.
And we
BBC.
Can hear that after 3:30. Yeah. Something to look forward to. Okay, we are 0333 003 2353 this afternoon and every afternoon. And also, don't forget that on Thursdays, we magic ourselves into peacocks, don't we, in the studio with the Wickes Proud as a Peacock Award.
That's right.
Where you can win a 250 quid voucher by telling us about somebody you are proud of. That's all you have to do. It doesn't even have to be DIY themed, Jane, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, don't exaggerate and don't tell any porkies either, but do just tell us about somebody or something in your life that has made you feel very proud this week. You can do it on WhatsApp, but it might be a bit easier to put it in a lovely, beautifully crafted email. That's janeandfee@times.radio or 0333 003 2353. You can get a lot at Wickes for 250 quid. So do not spurn this opportunity to be as proud as a peacock here on Times Radio.
What are the most read stories on the Times so far today, Jane Susan?
At number three, Andrew Gwynn set to stand down as MP. Now, this is claiming to potentially clear the way for one Andy Burnham. Andrew Gwynn is the Labour MP for Gorton and Denton in Manchester. He was sacked as a health minister, you might recall, over a WhatsApp group he was in. It bore the unfortunate name Trigger Me Timbers. His exit could mean that Manchester's mayor returns as an MP. The second most read story is boy five seized by ICE agents on the way home from school. Liam Ramos and his father Adrian have been sent to a detention centre more than 1,000 miles from their home. We are talking, as Fee said earlier, to a Democrat a little bit later. I wonder what that representative will make of this story. And the most read piece on the Times website is Davos Live. Trump hails new Gaza plans as he launches his Board of Peace. The Times does have all the latest updates, including on the visit of the Danish Prime Minister to the UK. She has insisted the sovereignty of Greenland is non-negotiable. This is after President Trump announced a framework for the entire Arctic region in Davos. So, as ever, there's a lot happening. You can keep up with everything on thetimes.com. You will need a digital subscription. You can get one by going to thetimes.com/subscribe.
Do you think we should do as a side hassle today on the WhatsApp, invigorating WhatsApp group names? You don't have to tell us who's in the group. You don't have to tell us what the group's about. We can just make our own summations.
I think actually trigger me timbers isn't bad, is it?
No, it was what was in the messages.
Oh, yes.
That was difficult.
That was beyond the pale.
My sister and I have one called Sisters of Mercy. Do you get it?
Very good.
We were big fans back in the day. Almost 4.5 million children live in poverty in the UK, while food price rises continue to outstrip average inflation. That makes it harder for families to afford a healthy diet for their kids. And campaigners, including Emma Thompson, say that schools need to step up their standards to make sure that children are getting the food they need. She has taken part in a new film from the Food Foundation. Let's have a quick listen.
We eat lunch at school 190 days of the year.
We all just want to sit down to a school lunch that's good for us.
Imagine that. Classrooms would be calmer, children with full tummies, ready to learn, teachers could teach, parents could have one less thing to worry about.
One plate of food, changing our futures.
Every child has the right to healthy food. Let's get it right in all our schools. Let's give all our kids a good lunch.
Well, let's talk to Dr. Hannah Brinsden, who is the Foundation's Head of Policy and Advocacy. Dr. Brinsden, just explain to our listeners who might not be familiar with what's on offer at the moment in the school canteen, what is usually laid out for kids to eat at lunch.
Hello, thank you for having me today. So what we're seeing at the moment is poor food getting onto children's plates. It can be a whole variety of things, chips, pizza, etc. And what we want to do is really try and transform that into something that is nourishing and supports children's health. And really believe that the government has a unique golden opportunity to do that right now, off the back of their free school meals announcement that they made last year and their commitment to update those standards. And I can't emphasise enough how important it is that we get that right to really support children up and down the country, primarily those in poverty, but not just those. If we can get school food right, then it can have a trickle effect to everybody who eats school food.
When we heard Emma Thompson in that short clip from the film say all schools, do you mean all schools? We're not just talking about primary schools here.
No, we're talking about all schools, primary and secondary. And the school food standards that we have at the moment that need updating do apply to both. And I think there's a lot of improvements that can be made, particularly actually in secondary schools, where we know there are a lot of problems with grab-and-go meals, a lot of highly processed sort of snacks and drinks and things like that we just don't want to see on our children's plate at lunchtime. And the government needs to really step up and set the boundaries for what a good meal looks like, and also needs to introduce monitoring. So one of the big issues we have at the moment is that even with the standards that exist, they're not being adhered to. So having a really comprehensive monitoring system that means that all parents can send their children to school knowing that they're going to eat a good lunch. Teachers know the kids are having a good lunch, and children know that they can have a nutritious, healthy lunch when they sit down in the lunch hall.
Can you explain the funding to us? What is in the remit of central government? What is in the remit of the school?
So, the funding comes from central government. One of the things that we're actually asking for at the moment is to change the funding model to allow small schools and small caterers to actually sort of be able to play a better role in this system. We have a problem at the moment where at one end of the scale, there is a lot of profit being made. There's economies of scale that you get when you've got, you know, a big academy or a big caterer, and small caterers, small schools struggle to be able to provide the same food. So I think there is a big question here about what that funding model looks like, not necessarily putting more funding into the model, but repurposing it a way that actually allows all schools and therefore all children to access good food.
You can completely understand, Dr. Brinson, can't you, what happens to an awful lot of teenagers who are hungry by lunchtime. If you see a slice of pizza gleaming at you with its lovely shiny cheese and its promise of puffy, gluteny lack of goodness, and then you see a rather watery slice of hake stewing in some kind of greens juice, I know which one my teens would be going for. And also, when it comes to paying for food, that slice of pizza will be a quid and the other stuff will be more than that. So that's the problem, isn't it?
So I think this is one of the reasons why the standards need to be updated, because it's absolutely not fair to be putting the onus on children to be making those decisions in the hall. Of course, we want them to have choice over what they eat, but we should be also making sure that they're able to access good, nutritious food. And there's a lot of things that we can do to make, you know, healthy food affordable. We know children are not eating enough fruit, vegetables, beans and pulses at the moment, which are a great source of fibre. So you can do a lot to actually make very familiar foods, you know, a shepherd's pie, a lasagna, etc., sort of healthier and affordable by, you know, blending pulses, lentils, etc., with meat. And there's a lot we can do to make sure that the healthy options are affordable but also appealing for children. And this is why we need to be doing it across the school system from primary right through to secondary.
Why do we feel like we've been talking and talking and talking about this? Why is it such a cyclical story where the problem just doesn't seem to get solved? We've had Jamie Oliver, we've had the amazing work done by Henry Dimbleby, and yet here we are. What's going wrong all the time?
Yeah, it's a really good point. We do keep having this conversation, and I think it's really important to say, back after Jamie Oliver's campaign, we did get some school standards, and we did actually see uptake of school food increase as a result once they were fully enforced. I think one of the big problems comes back down to this question of monitoring and making sure that food is prioritised and the value of having good food in schools is really seen. So we know that children up and down the country have poor health outcomes at the moment. There are high rates of obesity, high rates of tooth decay and things like that, and low intakes of healthy food. But we also know that having a good, nutritious lunch, having a full stomach, can really support learning, boost attainment, reduce behaviour problems. So I think what we need to really do is we need to better understand the kind of true value, I guess, of having a good lunch. And we also need to make sure that we're monitoring it to make sure that it doesn't become the bottom of a list of priorities. And actually, we see it as a really key priority for achieving a lot of our health and education outcomes and aims across the country.
One of the things that I know that you're keen to do, and rightly so, is just to say that kids themselves would like to see some change, because sometimes, Dr. Brinson, I think we use a kind of broad brush of condemnation about teenagers and their eating habits, don't we? But actually, an awful lot of the kids featuring in your film are clearly saying, I want to feel better, I want to eat better, I want to have that choice available.
I think that's exactly it. At the moment, in a lot of cases, that choice isn't even available. So children who want it can't get it. And I think it's really unfair to kind of make these assumptions that children don't want the food. And what we've seen is that better school food standards has increased uptake. There are a lot of charities out there who are doing great work in schools, like on the ground, training chefs, working with the young people in their schools, primary and secondary, to create menus and to really deliver a better food offering. And we know that that is really well received. So that absolutely shouldn't be a barrier to us driving this forward. And it can have a knock-on effect. The better the food, the more children that eat it, then more children want to get involved. And it just really helps kind of shift this food culture and really improve our relationship with food.
What did you have for lunch?
What did I have for lunch? Yeah. I had a very good question. I had a butternut squash salad.
Oh, gosh.
Gold star for that.
Yeah. What did you have, Jane?
A chicken wrap from a well-known high street store.
Okay.
And then some of that very nice crunchy stuff.
We chocolate did. Covered, we had quite a lot of chocolate on the desk.
That's a balanced diet. Yeah. Well, you've both done very well. I think on first place was Dr. Brinston and you came in second place. But okay. Second place isn't bad. I had an enormous tub of beef ragout with absolutely no greens in it at all. Shoot me now.
Do you hate yourself?
A little bit now. More so since you've said that.
You really don't need to. Right. President Zelensky of Ukraine is speaking in Davos at the World Economic Forum. Now, I haven't been able to hear it, but we're going to play you a clip in a couple of minutes' time. It looks, though, judging by what they're putting up on the news channels, that he's at the end of his tether, frankly, and he's fed up to the back teeth. He says it's Groundhog Day and Europe just isn't doing anything. It talks the talk, but it doesn't do anything. So let's hear exactly what Mr. Zelensky has said in a minute or two. You are listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio, and we are with Wickes, who are the experts in kitchen and bathrooms. The kitchen and bathroom sale's now on. You can explore all the sale offers at wickes.co.uk or just go to your local Wickes store.
The Times Radio Assisted Dying Debate with Joe Coburn.
Assisted dying looked all set to be brought into law, but if the bill doesn't get through the Lords by the spring, it's over. On both sides, feelings are strong, and we brought together two eloquent and forensic thinkers to debate it. Columnist and philosopher Kathleen Stock has written a book called Do Not Go Gentle, The Case Against Assisted Death. The neurosurgeon Henry Marsh disagrees. The Times Radio Assisted Dying Debate with me, Joe Coburn.
Tonight from 9 on Times Radio and live on the Times YouTube channel.
We travel to explore, to learn, to connect. At Viking, we believe travel should be more than just a trip. It should be a doorway to cultural insight and personal enrichment. Our itineraries are designed to help you explore and engage with your destination through its food, culture, and customs. Start planning your river, ocean, or expedition journey today. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes. Let Wickes install your new kitchen. Choose from a wide range of kitchens and add the option of installation to your order. For complete peace of mind, all installations include a 2-year workmanship guarantee. Get started by booking a free design appointment at wickes.co.uk.
So let's go to Davos. President Volodymyr Zelensky speaking at the World Economic Forum right now. Now, he's warning that when you don't help people who are fighting for democracy, there are consequences.
Be honest. Europe must do more so its sanctions block enemies as effectively as American sanctions. Why is that important? Because if Europe is not seen as a global force, if its actions don't scare bad actors, then Europe will always be reacting, catching up with new dangers and attacks. We all see that the forces trying to destroy Europe do not face a single day. They operate freely, even operate inside Europe. Every victor who lives off European money while trying to sell out European interests deserves a smack upside the head. And if he feels comfortable in Moscow, it doesn't mean we should let European capitals become little Moscows. We must remember what separates Russia from all of us. The most fundamental line of conflict between Russia and Ukraine and all of Europe is this. Russia fights to devalue people, to make sure that when dictators want to destroy someone, they can. But they must lose power, not gain it. For example, Russia's missiles are produced only because there are ways to bypass sanctions. It's true. Everyone sees how Russia tries to freeze Ukrainians now, our people, Ukrainians to death at minus 20 degrees Celsius. But Russia couldn't build any ballistic or cruise missiles without critical components from other countries, and it's not just China. Too often people hide behind the excuse that China helps Russia. Yes, it does. But not only China. Russia gets components from companies in Europe, the United States, and Taiwan. Right now, many are investing in stability around Taiwan to avoid war. But can Taiwanese companies stop contributing electronics to Russia's war? Europe says almost nothing. America says nothing. And Putin makes missiles. And I think every country, of course, and every company that helps Ukraine repair its energy system, this is crucial. Thank you to all who support the Pearl program, helping us buy Patriot missiles. But wouldn't it be cheaper and easier to just cut Russia off from the components it needs for missiles production? Or even destroy the factories making them? Last year, most of the time was spent talking about long-range weapons for Ukraine. And everybody said that the solution was within range. Now, no one is even talking about it. But Russian missiles and Shahids are still here. And we still have the coordinates of the factories where they are made. Today, they target Ukraine. Tomorrow, it could be any NATO country. And here in Europe, we are advised not to mention Tomahawks, not to mention Tomahawks to the Americans, not to spoil the mood. And we are told not to bring up Taurus missiles. When the subject is Turkey, diplomats say don't offend Greece.
He does sound incredibly frustrated, doesn't he? Not really surprising. That's President Volodymyr Zelensky speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos in Switzerland. And there'll be more with John Pienaar here on Times Radio after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Let's briefly go to showbiz, and the vampire horror film Sinners has set a new Oscars record. It's had 16 nominations. Now, if you've seen it, you might remember its incredible blues music. It's all over the story. A burst of the soundtrack to Sinners, which has set that incredible new Oscars record. The Academy Awards ceremony is on the 15th of March, and we can have a word with Ashanti Omkar, film critic. So, have people been expecting this, that Sinners would get so many nominations?
I certainly was expecting it and hoping for it. I was rooting for this movie because this was very much the underdog movie in the whole race in so many ways. It was made, though, you know, it looked like it was a big budget it was made on. The fact that, you know, even the reportage around it and the money it was making was distilled and distorted, rather, around the media. So it's really nice for a film like this that has been seen by so many millions of people across the world to actually make it into this list, but not just that, to get these 16 nominations across the board, including Wumi Masaku, British actress,
yeah,
you know, being nominated there.
Yeah, no, that's great for her. She's, how old is she? She looks very young.
I'm not quite sure how old she is, but she's probably in her early 30s, I would say.
Oh, is she? Well, she's doing well on it. Well, but not that being in your 30s is in any way elderly. But our congratulations.
She's 39.
She's 39, is she? Okay, well, she looks amazing. Good luck to her and a fantastic, fantastic day for her and her family, I'm quite sure. So we'll look out for her on the 15th of March. No nomination for Paul Mescal. If you've seen Hamlet, you might be a bit surprised. What do you think?
Paul Mescal is a fantastic actor, and we've been waiting for him to be nominated more and more. And every year there's a lot of hype, and it's very unfortunate that he's being kind of sidelined, I would say, compared to other actors. And I am very sad about this because he is super talented. And like you mentioned in Hamnet, he's absolutely brilliant. But great news is that Jesse Buckley, who has a, I would say, a superior role and performance in Hamnet, it was all centered around her. She is in the running, which is great. As is Kate Hudson, which I'm very excited about that because Song Sung Blue is an underdog film, and that being recognised in this way is nice.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I knew nothing about that film, saw it last week. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, and she is astonishing in it. She's great.
Yes, she really is. And can I also say that it's great that Chloe Zhao, who made Hamnet, has been nominated, because she's only the 11th directing nomination for a woman. Can you believe that? In all these years of the Oscars, and this is the 98th Oscars, she's the 11th of women too. And she's the second woman to receive more than one directing nomination, following Jane Campion, which is astounding and shocking in 2025, 2026.
It actually is remarkable, isn't it? So Jane Campion, remind me, that was the film The Piano?
Yes, she has made a lot of beautiful films. And, you know, Jane Campion, you know, she is a legend. There's no doubt she's a legend. But we haven't seen any other women making those. So she did films like Power of the Dog, The Piano. You know, she's done A Bright Star, Top of the Lake, and she's brilliant at what she does, you know. But it's so sad that in terms of recognition, women are still being sidelined in these races.
Well, it's some high time that changed. Really good to talk to you. Sorry to squeeze you in this afternoon, but stuff happening, as it does tend to. Ashanti Onkar, thank you very much. The Oscars then are on the 15th of March. And let's hope that Jesse Buckley does it, and Wunmi Mosaku as well for Sinners. I know Jesse isn't British, but she's Irish, so it's very close.
You have to take the win.
Yeah, Wunmi is British, so we've definitely got her.
Now, shall we do just a couple of Wix Peacock Award nominations?
Let's go for it. Shall I go first?
Why don't you?
It's from Debbie, who says, I'd like to register and nominate a duo. My son and his wife have just moved into their forever home. It's a beautiful old building in Wellington in Somerset. Needs a lot of work and some TLC. For the minute they and us walked in, though, it had that feel. From the minute, I'm sorry, they walked in, it just had that feel. And I don't think they slept until the moving men shoved their bits over their threshold. They've got two young children, so there's a lot of love and laughter in the home. Well, I mean, it sounds like we should definitely consider them, because the thing is, as Debbie points out, that her son Aidan is a marine surveyor and he works offshore 1 month on, 1 month off, and does all the improvements by himself when he's at home. So it's quite a complicated tale, this. But I definitely get the message. A Wix voucher would help.
Alison says, I'd love to nominate myself for the award because I had a moment recently that made me feel genuinely proud. After months of putting it off, I finally tackled my big home project on my own, sanding, painting and fixing up a tired old room that I'd been avoiding for ages. Thank you for giving people a chance to share these little victories. Such a lovely part of the week. Well, you'll go into our pot, as will Kyra Cooper. You can send us a WhatsApp, 0333 003 2353, or email Jane and Fee at times.radio. We'll announce the winner at the end of the show. And don't forget, the Wix Kitchen and Bathroom sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
Yeah, I'm glad people are enjoying this. It's just a little bit of a smattering of positivity at the end of a tough old week for many people. Yes, I know we have to get on. Felix is giving me that look. Right, he's the producer today. Felix Forbes, alliterations, everything. What's next?
Whilst the orange one dominates in Davos, where are the Democrats? That's where we'll go after Andy Hayes tells us the latest news.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon.
Volodymyr Zelensky has told European leaders in Davos that Russian oil tankers must be stopped. The Ukrainian president says he wonders why Donald Trump stops tankers from the Shadow Fleet, but Europe doesn't.
Russian oil is being transported right along European shores. That oil funds the war against Ukraine. That oil helps destabilize Europe. So Russian oil must be stopped and confiscated and sold for Europe's benefit. If Putin has no money, There is no war for Europe.
President Trump has unveiled his Board of Peace. A number of world leaders joined him on stage in Davos, including Hungarian PM Viktor Orban and President Milei of Argentina. The board's first job is to oversee the rebuilding of Gaza. There may be a way for the mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, to return to the House of Commons. Andrew Gwynn, a former health minister who lost the Labour whip over offensive WhatsApp messages, is expected to announce possibly this afternoon that he's standing down as an MP. 29 council elections in England, due to be held in May, have been suspended. The local government secretary, Steve Reid, says it's part of plans to merge district and county authorities. And Jessie Buckley's been nominated for her first Oscar. The Irish actress already has a Golden Globe for her role in Hamlet. Elsewhere, Sinners has set a record for the most nominations ever with 16. And for a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Spire Healthcare gave me my life back.
The care I received was incredible.
Every year, over a million patients trust Spire Healthcare. See a leading medical expert privately in as little as 48 hours and get back to what you love sooner.
Spire Healthcare have given me a whole new lease of life.
And now I feel unbreakable again.
The sooner you're better, the better. Search Spire Healthcare today.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Daryl Morris brings you a first look at the Sunday Times front page splash, Saturday nights from 10:30.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Ready to start planning your new kitchen or bathroom? If you'd like a personalised design, the Wix free design service can guide you through the whole process, including a free home measure. Book today at wix.co.uk.
It's 25 minutes to three. If you're new to Times Radio, you may not be fully across our schedule. Jane and I are here in the afternoons. John Pienaar takes over 4 till 7, a very good hour between 6 and 7, which is you chatting through the day's news. I don't know how you fit it into an hour at the moment. And special nod to what happens after you. Kate Borsay has the evening edition from 7. She always has some fantastic guests and great panels. And tonight, Joe Coburn is going to present the assisted dying debate with Kathleen Stock and Henry Marsh. That'll be between 9 and 10. So if you're an eagle ears type of person who wants to keep across all of the day's news as we head into the evening, Times Radio is definitely the place for you. And of course, John, your time of day now is where America is doing its business, and you just have to look to it every day, don't you?
Yeah, it's absolutely a kind of, I don't know, an inflection point for so many stories. And now, just now, absolutely humongous stories. And today, just to this point, it's going to carry on later on in Brussels. We're seeing stories that school children, I think, are going to be reading about in history lessons in 100 years' time. A United States president setting up basically an alternative to the United Nations in his own image, with himself as the permanent leader, and a board filled with autocrats and some people, you know, wanted on warrants for war crimes. And it is quite a colourful board, the Board of Peace. But the idea is that this should be an alternative to the United Nations. That is history. Now, what those kids are going to read, I don't know. It may well be, and I'll be talking about this after 4 o'clock, it may well be that what they read is the whole thing doesn't add up to a hill of beans at all, if anything, counterproductive. And a test of that, one of the tests of that, is something that's happening now as we speak, where Volodymyr Zelensky is talking to the World Forum in Davos. We're hearing told by the American side that progress is taking place on a Ukraine deal. What he's just been doing is telling European and world leaders, you can't count on America to come to your side if Russia strikes Europe. So it doesn't sound like there's a lot of progress going on there to me. So I'm going to be talking about the border peace and what it really, really means. I've got Lord Sidwell, the former National Security Advisor and Cabinet Secretary, coming on. Lieutenant General Ben Hodges from the United States. I've got a former Lithuanian Foreign Minister and others too, a former Chief of Staff to the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. I'm just going to try and weigh it up and put together a kind of, I don't know, a very early on-air draft of history before we go much further.
Wow. Good luck, as you say. Thank you very much, John. Well, we have heard quite a lot from Donald Trump recently, whether he's threatening the future of NATO, mistaking Iceland for Greenland, or accusing women leaders of repeating themselves. That was yesterday, though. He's been filling the airtime like nobody else. But as his second term entered its second year earlier this week, what opposition is he facing? Aditi Bussell's Democrat strategist joins us now to tell us where her party is. A very good afternoon from us in London. It does puzzle us on this side of the pond not to see a belly full of top Democrats parading their displeasure about Trump. Is that because we're not looking hard enough, we are too distracted by Trump, or they're simply not there?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's not there. I think it's important for us to, when I talk about my party, I want to distinguish for this conversation that there is a clear division. I'm proud to represent the new generation of Democrats who, frankly, the establishment Democrats are not listening to. If you go to social media where a lot of Gen Z and millennial are communicating, they're saying, you are in office. You are a senior senator or a House of Representatives member, and all you're doing is releasing statements and tweets. You're not actually taking legislative action to change some of the horrible things that are happening in our country. So you all are seeing what we are feeling, which is an immense sense of frustration that the Democrats that have been in power for a very long time are doing, which is using the same playbook, evoking us feeling very enraged and frustrated, and then asking for money to get reelected.
Okay. Why is that old guard so ignorant about what seems to need to be done? And I'm not being party political there. That's just a point about what you should be capable of doing in opposition, any opposition.
I think it's the fear of losing power. I think that the Democrats, what's very clear, and in some ways Trump's policies has helped shed light on, is that for the last several elections, they focused on the wrong thing. They focused on identity politicking, on fringe issues that don't really matter to the everyday American. And this sense that there is this moral superiority, and that while they want to be seen as the party that's diverse and the party that is inclusive, if you don't believe exactly what they believe, they're going to make you feel like you should be canceled or be excluded. So I think that it's just a clear disconnect. They want to keep power. And when you look at the ways in which some of our Democratic leaders are still funded, it is coming from large-scale corporations, PACs, and APEC, and some of these other, I think, organizations that really bother everyday voters that identify as Democrats.
So what's going to happen to the party? Will it stay coherent as the next election approaches, or could your more progressive wing of the party seek to actually be something different? Is that even possible?
Well, I think we've seen it in terms of smaller scale, and I like to think that I'm more of the pragmatic side, where I welcome and I want to truly be a big tent, because there are some issues that I think that, millennials and Gen Z, we see and may even agree with on the Republican side, right? And I think we've seen it in terms of people wanting a non-traditional politician, whether or not you agree with all of his policies. Mamdani is one example in New York, where you've seen that he completely went against the establishment and won. And I think you're going to start to see more of that. People bucking the system, working outside of the traditional Democratic establishment and infrastructure, and really mobilizing everyday voters who may even consider themselves as independent to come out and vote and try and do something different. I think there's also this general new sense of incumbents aren't safe. As an incumbent myself, you know, I recently came up short in my election. There is this sense of we need new energy, primary everyone. And I think that that is what we have to focus on in terms of the state and local level is getting good leaders in there that are not beholden to special interests and will actually represent the people that they are serving.
Is there embarrassment within the Democrat Party about what happened with Joe Biden? There seemed to be a period after Trump was elected where the Democrats seemed unable to explain to people why they had hung on to Joe Biden for so long.
I wouldn't say it's embarrassment. I think there's frustration. Again, you know, in the circles that I'm in and the folks that I'm talking to, our frustration began when there wasn't a true primary for us to be able to choose someone that would represent the values that we hold. I do think it's important to recognize the mistakes that that process made, which set up Kamala Harris for failure in many ways. But I also think that that is the issue with the Democrats that are currently in power. They're afraid to say when they've made a mistake. And I think that you saw that with people kind of trying to reconcile some of the things that everyday voters didn't agree with in the Biden administration. But that being said, you know, there's no comparison between the era that we're in now. I heard one of your colleagues say people will be reading about this. Kids will be reading about this in their textbooks because I could have never imagined the extreme lengths that we have gone in our country under the Trump administration.
Who would you back for the next presidential nomination? Would you back Kamala Harris again?
I think I have not seen anybody that is compelling, that is speaking to some of the issues that I have raised in our discussion today. I think that it would be good to have a fresh face, someone who is not part of the political apparatus. I don't know who that person is, frankly, right now on the presidential level. I think we've identified and are continuing to build a pipeline on the local and state level. But I think that there needs to be, as we say in the South, a real come to Jesus moment in terms of continuing to platform the same people that are not actually getting things done. So it'll be interesting to see this next year in the midterms how that may potentially propel the current establishment to maybe try and do things differently. Mm. Otherwise, I do think, frankly, we're preparing for another 4 years of a Republican president.
Obviously, Donald Trump isn't from politics. He is from real estate, money making, and then show business. So if you could pick anybody you like, Aditi, from show business, money, and not politics, who might that be? And obviously, we're never going to hold you to this, but I think it's quite interesting for us to try and stretch our minds a bit.
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say, in terms of someone who I think is a great orator and is currently in politics, but I'm not sure that this country would be ready to elect, is Mayor Pete. I think he's done a really good job of making the most mundane issues like infrastructure sound exciting. But I do think also in terms of potentially, you know, entertainment. Oh, that's tough because there's so much division in Hollywood as well.
Yep.
We're also seeing some reality stars running for mayor. If you have been following, we're starting to see some sports commentators, people jumping in. I think it'd be great to see someone like Mark Cuban or, you know, some of the folks that don't need to be in positions of power necessarily to continue to build their business. Mm. But people that are not, and people that are also not afraid to call out corruption or hold both sides accountable. I think somebody like that would be interesting to see how they pivot from being in the business world into the politics world.
I think we need a real housewife.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, no, I really do. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us. We appreciate your time. Aditi Bustles, Democratic strategist. And it's just always good, isn't it, to hear that there is an opposition. And again, I'm not making a party political point at all, but it's healthy. It is healthy for any administration to be challenged. And, you know, that is a voice of challenge who's also holding her head in her hands a bit about the old guard. Yes. Well, it doesn't sound as though President Zelensky got a lot of satisfaction from Donald Trump today in their meeting, judging by what Zelensky then went on to say at Davos. Any road up? Let's just bring in Jerry, who says, I'd like to nominate myself for the Wix Proud as a Peacock Award, because nobody else will. I've just completed and handed in my master's dissertation after 2 years of hard slog while working, raising the kids and keeping the house semi-functional. And all, she says, at the tender age of 42. Thank you, says Jerry. Well, you're right in the mix, Jerry. Thank you very much for that. Keep your Proud as a Peacock stories coming in, please. 0333 003 2353 on the WhatsApp, or it's janeandfee@times.radio if you want to send in perhaps a more considered email. Now, next, we'll discuss the return of the king of TV talent shows with associate editor of the Times magazine, Jane Malkarins. Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Alexis Conran on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers Travel. Go beyond the headlines and explore the human experiences at the heart of the week's news agenda with well-informed debate and thoughtful insight, tailor-made for anyone looking to broaden their horizons, not follow the herd.
Plus, get my expertly curated guide to the best the weekend has to offer, whether you're staying in or looking for adventure.
This Saturday afternoon from 1 on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers. Never stop seeking with Wild Frontiers Travel.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something unexpected has arrived in Happy Meal. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Hello Kitty and friends are teaming up for the ultimate collab. Joining your little ones on a fun-fueled adventure. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 2nd of February, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your Zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan. Or enjoy a 1,000-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontiers' expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
She's here in a beautiful dress, leopard. We're going to say it's leopard skin again, isn't it?
Leopard print, yes.
Leopard print.
Yes, leopard print, not leopard skin. Although, I wouldn't mind that. No, well, it'd be warm, though, wouldn't it?
A lot of listeners would be a bit squeamish.
Yeah. I think it would be a bit too Flintstones. This is.
Yeah, it could have some cut-out bits, couldn't it?
Yabba-dabba-doo. Jane Malkarins is associate editor of the Times magazine. It's incredible how far such an humble woman has risen in life.
Yabba-dabba-don't.
In the mag this week, as ever, a mixed bag, including the return of the one and only
Sam Cowell.
Now, you liked him.
He's back. I did like him enormously. I liked him tremendously. So just to give you the background to this, Simon Cowell, some of you may have already seen this on a documentary that came out in December, Simon Cowell, The Next Act. But Simon Cowell, 16 years after launching One Direction, got, in his own words, a bit comfortable and a bit bored and decided that he missed the buzz of putting a band back together. So being Simon Cowell, he thought, I'd like to put a band together. Let's film it. So there's a documentary about the putting together of this band, who was meant to be 4 or 5, but it's actually 7 because Simon couldn't get rid of any more. December 10, who are a lovely, lovely group of young men.
Okay. And what kind of music is it?
It's pop music. They may have the exact same writers who used to write for One Direction. Okay. And their first single is out next week. And it's a bouncy little earworm of a number called Run My Way. But basically, Simon is very, very invested in this band. And so we did a shoot with Simon and his band. And he was absolutely charming. He is such a mentor to the boys. They all clearly adore him. As soon as he arrived, he was just sort of in the thick of it with them all, didn't stop talking to them all day. He really genuinely cares. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people's reactions when I've said how much I liked him have been sort of negative about him. And I think...
Why do you think... Because I must admit, I might have been one of those people. Why do you think some of us take against him?
Well, I think for a long time, all we knew of Simon Cowell was the man that we saw on a panel on The X Factor and Britain's Got Talent, who was withering and caustic.
He was cruel at times.
And he has actually addressed that in an interview about the Netflix show that he did with the New York Times. He did say he probably went too far. He had a little excuse that he gets bored in auditions, but he also addressed the fact that it was a bit too much and he behaved badly. But I think he's also mellowed a lot. I think that was partly a sort of pantomime act, but I think he's mellowed. I think he broke his back really badly in the pandemic, which he didn't really talk about until quite recently, but he almost severed his spinal cord. Couldn't walk for months. He's got a rod and pins in his back. And
so he was really lucky then.
Yeah, I think he faced his own mortality a lot. Mm. He's become a dad, which he says has massively changed him. And again, he took Eric, his son, who's now 12, through this whole audition process with him. They're really close. I think it has made him see things from a different perspective. Liam Payne died in 2024, which we also talk about in the interview. And I think that has made him think about the price of fame and how you need to guide and protect and usher young people if you're going to put them in a band and put them on the global stage. And I think all of it has made a huge difference to the man that I met. Also, I just think he's happier. I just think he's a much happier man than he maybe was 15 years ago.
Have you gone a bit soft, Jane? I'm just wondering. Shouldn't he have realised all of those things before?
Yes, Fee, but sometimes it takes people a while, doesn't it?
It shouldn't.
Okay.
I'm kind of with my sister in broadcasting.
She's not gone
here.
A bit soft, has she?
Well, she has a point.
I mean, yes, I think that sometimes, yes, but I think people maybe get put in a role that they play up to and perhaps don't realise the effect that it's having on others around them.
But then maybe they should.
Maybe they should.
Okay, well...
Okay, not a lot of forgiveness in this studio for Simon Cowell.
I'm sure he's in his own way perfectly likeable.
Can I just tell you, Tony Turnbull, my desk buddy,
yes,
just read this piece just now before I came upstairs and he said, gosh, that was really interesting and it's really made me like Simon Cowell a lot more and think about him a lot more.
Okay, well, I mean, I read it and I also came to pretty much the same conclusion, so that your work here is done on this planet as part of the Simon Cowell Apologists Society of Great Britain. I did think it was interesting that he's put seven, as you say, seven boys, lads, into this pop group, because that was sort of spread the pressure a bit.
Yeah, that was something that he sort of seemed to think of only in the interview when we were talking about it, because I was pushing him on whether there's any more pastoral care now for this band than there was for One Direction and other bands that he put together. He does talk about how hard it hit him after Liam Payne had died, and the pressure on that band was so enormous when they were at the height of their fame. And he was sort of thinking about this in the interview, and he said, I think maybe that is part of the reason I've picked seven of them, because I want them to have each other to rely on, to kind of spread the pressure to have. And they're already doing it. It's very sweet to watch them, actually. They are quite fraternal. I mean, they're 16 to 19. They're so, very so young. And he also, he said that. He said there is a tremendous risk with having a band so young. Like he's very aware of it. But I met their welfare officer, I met a lot of people looking after them, and I just hope that everybody is more aware of the pressures on young people doing that kind of job. I mean, 300 million people saw that documentary on Netflix, and they've already got girls waiting outside the hotel room. They've already got people taking pictures of them in fast food outlets. You know, they're already obviously Instagrammable, wherever they go. They've been in New York this week, and I've been watching them on their Instagram, and it's all very exciting. But as Simon says, there will come a point with some negative comments, and they're going to have to learn how to deal with that.
Right. Okay. Let's move on with. I mean, this is a real slice of life. Comedy writer Max Oleska and his betrothal to an Orthodox Jewish lady.
Yeah,
they're very much in love, but he's certainly gone.
He's been through it.
He's gone there. I don't know what to say. He's just gone.
Yeah, I think it's such an incredible story, and it's heartwarming, and it'll also make you wince all at the same time. He is a comedy writer who was raised as a Reform Jew. His mum wasn't Jewish. His mum converted to marry his dad, and so he is not technically Jewish.
No, because your mum has to be.
Because your mum has to be Jewish, yeah. So he couldn't marry Eliana, who he fell deeply and quickly in love with, and who is very Orthodox. So this story is a brilliant account of the sort of challenges they faced, and he decided that he wanted to go through the conversion process, which involved living with a religious family in North, very Jewish North London, you know, learning how to be an Orthodox Jew, and of course it also involved adult circumcision. It's very beautifully written. It's a very funny
it's
piece.
Very, very well written. Yes.
And there is a happy ending, and that 2.5 years after he decides, 2.5 years they couldn't touch each other.
But he really loved
her. He must have really, like, he did date some other people. Tatiana, I quite like, who's in the piece, who almost got him with a shot, who sounded quite fun. And he could have kept his foreskin for her. But anyway, he did marry Eliana, and his account of the ultimate circumcision is definitely, it's an interesting few paragraphs.
It's a riveting read.
Yes.
It brings us on to Hunter Davis.
Yes.
Now, I want to give a little health warning here to anybody who will be picking up the Times magazine on Saturday in their lovely bundle. Can you read this online?
You can read it online, Hunter, with your subscription. It's worth a subscription just for this piece.
Well, I'm not sure I'd endorse that fully. He's 90.
He is 90. And I would say this is the battle cry of the nonagenarian lover.
Okay, that's probably enough. he is still in the market.
Very much so.
Lady love.
Very much so. Yes, he talks about the benefits of older sex, about taking your time and things like that. And he does say for most people it's the most enjoyable and satisfying sex of their whole life. So I just think that's something for us all to look forward to.
I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. You can read about Hunter Davis and his love life at over 90. You can read about the wonderful Orthodox Jewish marriage and the sacrifice that had to be made by the male of the partnership.
Or you can calm yourself down.
Or you could just...
By reading about Simon Cowell, and that's quite something.
Sit quietly. Yes, exactly. Sit quietly in the presence of Simon Cowell. You take your choice. Right, let's just listen to some beautiful music as we approach 3 o'clock.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
All of that does take us to 3 o'clock. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio. Still to come, we head to Europe to hear how leaders are responding to Trump's pivot on Greenland. The Oxford Dictionary of National Biography is turning over a new page. We'll reflect on its legacy with the historian Alice Loxton. And Carol Vorderman is our big guest after 3:30. She'll be sharing her secrets on breaking the midlife mould. That sounds disgusting. Let's get the headlines first with Andy Hayes.
Thank you very much. Volodymyr Zelensky says there'll be a trilateral meeting between the US, Russia and Ukraine tomorrow and on Saturday. It'll take place in the UAE. The Ukrainian president says documents to end the war are almost ready. He's told European leaders in Davos that Russian oil tankers must be intercepted.
Why can't President Trump stop tankers from the shadow fleet and seize oil, but Europe doesn't? Russian oil is being transported right along European shores. That oil funds the war against Ukraine. That oil helps destabilize Europe. So Russian oil must be stopped and confiscated and sold for Europe's benefit.
The head of NATO, Mark Rutte, has denied Donald Trump made a U-turn in his desire to take over Greenland. Last night, the US president said he was dropping the threat of tariffs against countries that disagree with his plans. But Rutte says Trump was focused on the danger of Russia and China getting a foothold in the Arctic during his first presidency as well.
He is the leader of the free world. If he is worried about something, hey, we'd better listen, because then he might have found something which is not good. And that is this issue of the Russians and the Chinese getting more and more access, because the sea lanes are opening up. We know there are 7 Arctic countries in NATO. That's the US, because of Alaska, that's Canada, and then 5 in Europe. And the 8th one is Russia. And we don't want the Russians to get access to our part of the Arctic.
There may be a way for the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, to return to the House of Commons. Andrew Gwynn, a former health minister who lost the Labour whip over offensive WhatsApp messages, is expected to announce possibly this afternoon that he's standing down as an MP. The Times' assistant political editor, Gerry Scott, says Sir Keir Starmer has a number of decisions to make about Andy Burnham.
They include potentially blocking him from standing and trying to almost emulate what we saw Kemi Badenoch do with Robert Jenrick by standing up to someone who might want to challenge the leadership. But there is also the case that if he blocks him, he looks weak, running scared from someone who might want to challenge him for that leadership. Alternatively, if he, you know, allows him to proceed and be the candidate and Andy Burnham was to lose in that by-election, that would immediately puncture any talk of kind of his supreme electability.
29 council elections in England, due to be held in May, have been suspended. The local government secretary, Steve Reid, says it's part of plans to merge district and county authorities. Liz Hurley has alleged the publisher of the Daily Mail tapped her landlines and placed microphones on her windows to get stories. She's one of seven claimants, including Prince Harry, who accuse Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering, something it denies. And vampire horror movie Sinners has set a new Oscars record with 16 nominations. Jessie Buckley's been nominated for her first Academy Award for her role in Hamlet. And for a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
It's not too late to be as proud as a peacock here on Times Radio. Every Thursday we do this. You can win a £250 Wickes voucher, and you can get a lot at Wickes for £250. Just tell us what has made you proud. Big yourself up. Boast. Why not? Get involved, and I'll tell you before 4 o'clock who is going to take away the voucher. 0333 003 2353, or you can send us an email, janeandfee@times.radio. Now, in a moment, Fee's going to be talking to the historian Alice Loxton, aren't you? What's that about?
Well, it's about a book that I've never read. It is a history of biography. So it's got a really lovely kind of twist and turn of phrase. It's where you go if you want to kind of know something gossipy about somebody who's died, as well as the simple statistics. So we're going to talk about that. It's got a new editor.
Oh, right. That sounds a very erudite item. OK, and that's coming next, after we've discussed European affairs, Donald Trump, and everything else going on in the world, really. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, as you know, has been speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, and he used his speech earlier this afternoon to properly actually tear in to his supposed European allies.
In Europe, there are endless internal arguments and things left unsaid that stop Europe from uniting and speaking honestly enough to find real solutions. And too often, Europeans turn against each other, leaders, parties, movements and communities, instead of standing together to stop Russia, which brings the same destruction to everyone. Instead of becoming a truly global power, Europe remains a beautiful but fragmented kaleidoscope of small and middle powers. Instead of taking the lead in defending freedom worldwide, especially when America's focus shifts elsewhere, Europe looks lost trying to convince the US president to change. But he will not change. President Trump loves who he is. And he says he loves Europe, but he will not listen to this kind of Europe. One of the biggest problems in today's Europe, though it's not often talked about, is the mindset. Some European leaders are from Europe, but not always for Europe. And Europe still feels more like a geography, history, a tradition, not a real political force, not a great power. Some Europeans are really strong, it's true. But many say we must stand strong, and they always want someone else to tell them how long they need to stand strong. preferably until the next election. But that's not how great power works, to my mind. Leaders say, we must defend European interests, but I hope someone else will do it for them. And speaking of values, they often mean valueless. They are all like, we need something to replace the old world order with. But where is the line of leaders who are ready to act? Act now, on land, in the air, at the sea, to build a new global order. You can't build the new world order out of words. Only actions create real order.
Right. Message couldn't really be clearer, could it? Stop talking, do something. That was Volodymyr Zelensky at the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. He was speaking in the last hour or so. European leaders, many of whom will have slightly burning ears, are gathering this evening. They'll be discussing the future of the Transatlantic Alliance, among other topics. That is after their standoff with Donald Trump and the US over the future of Greenland, of course. Let's go to Brussels, and our Times correspondent there is Bruno Waterfield. Zelensky often speaks in public. He doesn't often sound quite as angry and frustrated as he did today, Bruno.
Yes, good afternoon. I can really sympathise with him. A lot of those barbs will find their mark. It's not the first time that people have said this kind of thing, after all. And you can really understand his frustration. The Greenland affair, driven mainly by social media messages from President Trump, completely knocked Ukraine off the stage this week. There have been very intensive diplomatic talks going on in terms of constituting a multinational a force for Ukraine to enforce, to monitor any peace deal, if there is a peace deal. All of that completely wiped from our screens, wiped out of the newspapers, from any discussion by this row over Greenland. And of course, this row wasn't settled because of the European Union, despite their calm and principled, that's the words we're hearing a lot here today, despite their calm and principled stance, behind which there were lots of divisions. This problem was sorted out, the Greenland problem was sorted out at NATO, and it was sorted out really at the end of the day because America can't afford to disrupt NATO too much. So European leaders will be meeting here tonight to ask what it all means. And I suspect that Zelensky is probably right in that there's not going to be a huge amount of agreement or consensus on where to go next. I suspect they'll probably congratulate themselves, but they've avoided a huge crisis and a huge incident over Greenland, even though they were merely bystanders on the whole.
OK, I mean, it does sound as though, we should say, Zelensky, President Zelensky, made that speech after he'd spoken to Donald Trump. It doesn't sound as though he got a huge amount of help from Donald Trump, although President Trump himself says he's been relatively positive about that conversation, I understand. But Zelensky can't see help coming from anywhere. And what we do know of what's going on in Ukraine is that it's incredibly cold. Power is sometimes on, sometimes off, more often off than on. And the people are properly suffering. And you're right, the news caravan has moved on, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And look, I think there is a problem. There is a problem, not really that the EU isn't a great superpower, to be literal and frank about it and correct. It was never meant to be. It wasn't created to be a superpower. The real problem is that European countries, not least Britain among that number, haven't really stepped up to the plate in terms of doing what they need to do in order to deter Russia, to build a Western alliance, build a new NATO, if you like, a NATO 2 in order to deter Russia. And of course, Ukraine is left fighting. Ukraine is left fighting on its own. It's not getting great support from Trump, who regards Zelensky and Putin more or less as of equal merit in this peace deal. So I can really understand his frustration. And I suspect that after this summit, yet another summit. I mean, they do a lot of summits here in this place, but things won't really have changed, except for this growing realization that the world is changing around them, that the relationship with the United States and with other countries is changing. It's a harsher, colder world out there. It's a world where international relations will be and are going to be more defined by coercion rather than some sort of gentlemanly or loyally discussion about rules.
OK, well, I've just got some breaking news and an example of some European cooperation. Anyway, The Times is reporting that Britain has helped French forces seize a sanctioned Russian oil tanker in the Mediterranean. It's understood the French Navy led the operation, with soldiers descending onto the vessel from two helicopters. The tanker in question is called Grinch, and it was sanctioned by the UK, US and the EU. We're told it was travelling from the Russian port of Murmansk, loaded with oil. I mean, again, that President Zelensky did talk about Russian oil, didn't he, earlier?
Yes, I mean, these kinds of interventions are seen as long overdue. It's over the last really year and a half or so that the EU has really stepped up sanctions on the shadow fleet. And again, there's a dawning realisation that the old-fashioned law of the sea, those rules have been effectively torn up by the Russians anyway, in terms of how these vessels are flagged and how they conduct themselves, in terms of switching off their navigation systems sometimes to evade detection. So again, it's a new era.
And the meeting in Brussels tonight, will there be any kind of consensus at that meeting about how Europe should deal with Donald Trump?
I think there will be an acceptance of the fact that this is how it is going to be in future. There is less consensus about how to deal with him. Do you just very calmly, firmly state your principles, or do you actually make preparations and take actions to effectively punish America? So there's been a lot of talk of this so-called trade bazooka that they have locked away just over there, actually, in the European Commission, something called an anti-coercion instrument. It's very procedural, it's very bureaucratic. It takes, you know, the quickest it can ever be deployed is like 10 weeks. And I think so they're going to have more discussion about sometimes the only thing that Trump understands is a zero-sum game of winners and losers. He blinked on Greenland because he was certainly worried, or people in Washington were worried about what was going to happen to NATO. Can the EU, does the EU have that kind of punching weight? No, it doesn't at the moment. So that's a discussion they're going to have. Even the limited trade measures that they can take to try and deal with Trump, there's no agreements on. So the French want to use it, the Germans don't, the Italians certainly don't. So there's a lot of disagreement there in the scenes, because, you know, one of the grandiosity of the European Union, that flag flying just over there, are very different national interests at play in the European Union. There's a really big difference between how President Macron of France sees the world and how Giorgia Meloni of Italy sees the world. How you bridge those two gaps, nobody knows. It's the age-old question for Europe.
Thank you very much. That's Bruno Waterfield, who's in Brussels. A slightly dodgy line, that, so apologies if that was making your ears sting. He is the Brussels correspondent for The Times. That meeting of European leaders starts at around 6 o'clock our time. So keep listening to Times Radio for further details.
It's Jane and Fee at times.radio. We're 0333 003 2353. Coming up, cigars, siestas and rumours of syphilis. Whose biography are we summarising there? Would you care to take a guess?
Actually, I better not. For legal reasons.
Okay. They will have died.
They died. So I can say what I like.
Yeah, go on.
Was it Stalin?
No. We'll tell you in a moment. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit your local Wix store.
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
We'll be looking out for key detail in that framework for a deal on Greenland that was agreed by Donald Trump and NATO's Mark Rutte. It's worth saying that an EU leaders' summit will still go ahead in Brussels today. And Donald Trump is planning to meet with Vladimir Zelensky. At the same time, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, his envoys, will meet with President Putin in Moscow. Will we get progress on a deal between Ukraine and Russia?
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan. Or enjoy a 1,000-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontiers' expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
They say, go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. That's right, the Big Arch is back and it's here to stay. Big Arch, for big McDonald's hunger. Order in the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Upcharges apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Right now, the kitchen and bathroom sale is on. There are options to suit every budget and every home. Browse all the kitchen and bathroom sale offers at wix.co.uk.
Colin's a naughty poppet. He suggests that description is Ed Vasey.
Apart from anything else, very much with us. And thank goodness, by the way.
But the rest of it, don't know. Right, together with Wix, we'd like to know your proudest moment of the week to be in with a chance to win a £250 Wix voucher in our Wix Peacock Awards. Jane, have we got some new entries?
Yes. Well, I'm going to read Glyn's out only because it makes me laugh. Glyn, you're never going to win. I've always fancied owning a bit at the end of my next-door neighbour's garden, he writes, as it would make a great spot for my dog to do its business in, away from my garden. So I told my neighbour I was going to have it and threatened to send my dog round to mark her territory. Strangely, the neighbour wasn't all that keen, so I threatened not to take in their Amazon deliveries anymore. But then I changed my mind and I've now set up a neighbourhood WhatsApp group that all neighbours can join if they give me a tenner. No, nobody has joined yet, but I've got high hopes. So all in all, Glyn tells us he's had a productive week and he ends with the hashtag proud as punch. But not proud as a peacock, so I'm afraid you cannot win, Glyn.
That's the only thing that disqualifies Glyn, really.
Well, it's not the only thing, actually.
Mark says, for 25 years we've lived in accommodation tied to our work, and I promised my wife when we had a house of our own I'd build her a bathroom. The bathroom was completed last week, picture attached, without wife in bath.
Does look lovely.
It looks gorgeous. It's one of those jacuzzi baths, isn't it? He's a keeper.
You know, he really is.
I've finally delivered on my promise. However, the rest of the Edwardian house now needs renovating, so I would love the voucher. I think you're in with a chance.
And I think it's Wally who says, I'd like to nominate my wife Susan. She manages Liverpool Bereavement Services. It's a charity in Stanley Street in Liverpool with trainee students. It's completely free and it's run on a shoestring budget. Thank you very much indeed for that. Still an opportunity to take part. We'll tell you who gets the £250 voucher just before four. WhatsApp is 0333 003 2353, or it's Jane and Fee at times.radio.
Now, coming up after 3:30, who's the guest, Jane?
Carol Vorderman.
Every day at that time, you'll hear a fantastic interview with a brilliant guest. If you miss it, fear not. You can listen to it on our podcast off air with Jane and Fee, available at about 6 o'clock every Monday to Thursday. Recent topics, because it's not just the guests, nations that you might want to purchase, loincloth workshops in East London, and women in dungarees and having dongret. That's regretting voting for Donald Trump. You can hear the 3:30 interviews in full, though, and recently some fantastic guests, Maggie O'Farrell, Susie Wolfe, Sally Wainwright, and this week we spoke to Claudia Hammond, psychology lecturer and broadcaster. Now, Claudia has done a lot of work on the study of kindness, and we put it to her that when you look at the strong men around the world at the moment, kindness doesn't really seem to be in vogue.
Kindness is not in fashion at the moment in the wider world, and in a way in the world we see on the news. But there is still loads of individual kindness going on. And if you deliberately try and look out for that, you know, I recommend people become a kindness twitcher, if you like, because in some research at Sussex University that I was part of, we found that those people who were able to spot kindness around them had higher levels of well-being. And you can just watch for it. You know, now, once you start watching, you can't stop. I kept a kindness diary for a while of things I saw, which was things like people helping people with buggies up the steps of the tube, and people helping people, handing things back to people in the street that they'd dropped. And actually, once you start to look out for it, there is loads. And I think that can counter some of the unkindness we see.
Claudia Hammond, her book is out at the moment. It's called Overwhelmed. We enjoyed talking to her. The Oxford Dictionary of National Biography is the huge national record of the famous and sometimes infamous dead. It's known not just for its scholarship, but for a very British, very dry way of revealing who slept with whom, who drank too much and who died extremely rich. It's about to get a new editor after more than a decade in charge. Sir David Cannadine is stepping down, and this summer the historian William White will take over. So as the dictionary turns a new page, we're looking back at some of its most memorable moments and asking what comes next. We can do this in the company of the historian Alice Loxton. Alice, a very good afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. Tell us a little bit more about the history of the book itself and just a little bit more about its character.
Yes. Well, it's been around for a while. It's been going since 1885. And there was a big update in 2004 where they kind of refreshed the whole thing. And today it's this amazing kind of resource which historians use, students use. There's over 60,000 biographies of all these different people, 75 million words. And, you know, if you're ever trying to write a book about anyone in British history, so it's kind of looking at you know, men and women from British history and how they've shaped history and culture, but also kind of worldwide, but with a kind of focus on Britain. And, you know, it's a really good place to start. You know, I've written a few history books and it's probably the first place I'd always go to. But, you know, what was so wonderful about the article written in The Times is that it picks up on the kind of character. They describe about how, you know, the writers behind it, who are typically kind of experts, and then it's edited by you know, authorities at Oxford University. They spend their night looking at parish registers and correspondence and Times archive. And then in the morning, they kind of managed to produce this wonderfully precise, mannered, fairly amusing kind of write-up. So yeah, it's got lots of character.
And there does seem to be something in the descriptions of these people that you wouldn't be seeing in other obituaries. I mean, I don't want to just call it gossip, because obviously it should be true if it's published. But I think it does give a nod to the fact that we like to hear a bit about the more secretive elements of people's lives, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that's the reason often that people like to hear about history. And I suppose that's the colour that makes things memorable. And perhaps, you know, there's no exception for that when it comes to the academics who are also researching it as well as the reader. But, you know, it's quite dry sometimes, the things that are written, and quite surprising. And it's just sort of stated there, something perhaps quite outrageous and with absolutely no comment. You know, I suppose in a newspaper article or something, they might kind of comment on how ridiculous or outrageous that thing might have been, but it's quite funny in the Dictionary of National Biography that they just don't. But no, it's a good read, I think.
Yeah, they tell it how it is. Of Margaret Fountaine, we learned, despite her pride in class, which was always malleable, she formed a liaison with her Syrian dragon man. Of Iris Murdoch, we hear, won some respite from a complex set of involvements with both sexes and left an estate of £1,803,000. It's stuff like that, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, one of my favourite entries is Marjorie Kemp, who, I mean, did have quite a remarkable life. She's this woman from the 13 and 1400s, and she was this amazing mystic. So obviously going back a long way, but, you know, there's just quite extraordinary things happen, and they just state it. You know, she became pregnant, and then when the child was born, she experienced severe postpartum depression. This lasted for 8.5 months. She was finally cured in a classic way that I'm sure many women have found, when Jesus appeared and sat at the end of her bed speaking words of comfort. And then she began her life of conversion. She ran a brewing business, then a horse mill, And then embarked on a life of penance.
Right.
You know.
After she'd run a brewery.
Okay. And, I mean, for many people, a course of low-level antidepressants and some decent rest can do the same thing.
The trundles around the park.
Sure. How much difference does an editor make to a book like this?
Yes, it's a good question. I mean, I think what's really important for you know, for someone like me when I'm writing is that it is actually edited by Oxford University. It's published by Oxford University Press. And, you know, the new editor of it is someone called William White, who is an authority, an academic at Oxford, you know, and he's been on lots of impressive boards, the Oxford Preservation Trust, the English Heritage Blue Plaques panel, things like that. And so though, you know, it's this wonderful mix of character, of colour, of fascinating details, but, you know, it is also a reliable source that has been produced by many authorities in world history. So it's a really remarkable thing, and something of great value to anyone who's writing and learning about history.
And is it a bit of a prize to historians? I mean, would you have your eye on someday editing this?
Yes, I think people who are in the world of academia, it's the kind of thing that they would, you know, they would like that mark of respect. Me personally, I don't think I will ever kind of reach that level because I probably won't become a professor at Oxford. But, you know, who knows? But yeah, I think it's definitely something that people are proud of taking part in.
How often do you look at it?
Well, I mean, I write a book once a year, and so every time I'm researching, I would look at it. You know, I'm writing a book at the moment. I, for me, I guess every single figure from history that I'm writing about, I would check this, you know, as a place to start. And I tell you why. It's because, you know, it's a really good, concise article that's not that long, so you can read it in one go, but also it's got an amazing kind of bibliography at the bottom and, you know, other things to look at. So it's a very helpful starting point for research, I'd say.
It's lovely to talk to you, Alice. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Can we just find out whose biography it was? Cigars, Siestas and Rumours of Syphilis.
We need to check that with our own production team. Winston Churchill. Yeah. Thank you, Alice.
Thank
Didn't
you,
want
Alice.
To put you on the spot there.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realise you were asking me.
Yes.
I don't know who I was asking.
Just the ether, and the ether replied. Would you also, Jane, like to hear... Thank you, Alice. Lovely to talk to you. Would you like to hear the restrained entry for Prince Philip?
Yeah, I would, actually.
Yeah. So here we go. It took in the Duke's dashing demeanour, athletic physique and Viking good looks before observing that wartime service was punctuated by shore leave, which provided ample opportunity for further trysts and assignations.
I think there'll be more to come over the decades ahead about the life and times of the old sea dog myself. Just a thought. Right, Times Radio. Pretend you didn't hear that, by the way. It's Times Radio, it's 3:30, and next our guest is Carol Vorderman, whose nickname at university, let's just check whether Fee was listening earlier. What was Carol's nickname at university?
Well, it was to do with her thigh-high boots, wasn't it? So she was Boots Vorderman.
She was Boots Vorderman, top of the class. Thank you very much. Here are the headlines. Andy Hayes.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon.
Ukrainian, Russian and US officials will hold their first trilateral talks to end the Ukraine war tomorrow in the UAE. It follows a meeting between Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky in Switzerland, which the Ukrainian president describes as positive, but he's criticised Europe, which he says loves to discuss the future but avoids taking action. And he made a comparison with America's capture of the president of Venezuela.
Maduro is on trial in New York. Sorry, but Putin is not on trial. This is the fourth year of the biggest war in Europe since World War II. And the man who started it is not only free, he is still fighting for his frozen money in Europe.
Meanwhile, Britain has helped French forces to seize a sanctioned Russian oil tanker in the Mediterranean. In an operation led by the French Navy, soldiers descended onto the deck of the vessel from two military helicopters. There may be a way for the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, to return to the House of Commons. Andrew Gwynn, a former health minister who lost the Labour whip over offensive WhatsApp messages, is expected to announce he's standing down as an MP. Liz Hurley has cried while being questioned in her case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. She told the High Court that no friend of hers would say the things that were written about her. Associated Newspapers denies unlawful information gathering. And Jessie Buckley's been nominated for her first Oscar. The Irish actress has already won a Golden Globe for her role in Hamlet. Elsewhere, Sinners has set a record for the most nominations ever with 16. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
If you could sail anywhere in the world, where would you go? With Oceania Cruises, our small luxurious ships allow us to dock in boutique ports in 600 stunning destinations. We offer a more immersive experience and a personalized service, creating unique travel memories. From the Caribbean to the Mediterranean and the finest cuisine at sea, it can only be Oceania Cruises. Visit oceaniacruises.com or your travel agent.
At Aberdeen Investment Trusts, we create more ways for your money to work harder. Whether you're looking to tap into global markets or target specific goals at any stage of life, we have options for you. With Aberdeen, our investment knowledge and experience become yours. Search Aberdeen Investment Trusts online to learn more. When investing, please remember that your capital is at risk.
Issued by Aberdeen Fund Managers Limited.
Daryl Morris brings you a first look at the Sunday Times front page splash every Saturday night from 10:30.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen sale is now on. Start 2026 with a brand new kitchen. Kitchens start from under £3,000. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
There's still time. £250 is the value of the Wix voucher that we're giving away in Proud as a Peacock this week. Quick shout out to Daniel, who says, I'd like to nominate my amazing partner, Azada, I hope that's right, for the Wix Award. This Friday, it'll be a year since I first told her that I love her, and since coming into my life, she's managed to get me, somebody who recoils at the very thought of DIY, to change the kitchen, refloor my entire flat, redecorate the flat, while she herself spent the last 2 weekends repainting and resealing everything in my 2 bathrooms. Danny's off the market because he's now in love with this wonderful woman, but it's just worth noting he does have 2 bathrooms, so he's worth keeping in mind. Right, you can get involved between now and 4 o'clock. The WhatsApp is 0333 003 2353. You could win a £250 Wix voucher. Tell us why you're as proud as a peacock. And now to our big guest this week, Carol Vorderman, or today rather. Carol Vorderman is she's here to talk about everything really, but to celebrate midlife. Its joys, its challenges, some of the pitfalls. Now, Carol, whose media career started with Channel 4's Countdown back in the 80s, says her 60s are the age she always should have been. And she believes it's quite possible to embrace post-menopause as a truly positive stage of life. Carol's done it all. She was one of only a handful of women amongst hundreds of men, to study engineering during her time at Cambridge. She's been one of the highest paid women on telly, and she's a political animal who helped get Labour elected in the July of 2024. But I think it's worth saying she isn't entirely impressed by Sir Keir Starmer these days. I told her I just couldn't believe that she's now 65.
Yes, I'm 65. I've been around a very, very long time.
Or is that how it feels to you? Doesn't feel that way to me.
No, I tell you what's interesting is as you get older, you think, oh, God, you know, when the old adage used to be on, you know, you're old when the policemen look young. That's how it used to be said about 40 years ago. But I don't feel old at all. I just feel fearless. I don't feel like age is something, you know, that number is something that defines you. I never have felt that, to be perfectly honest.
The campaign that you're endorsing, Carol, is about embracing positivity in midlife. How do you do it?
I've been working with the online retailer, JD Williams, you know, through my life, not just me, but a lot of women in their particular industries and their lives and their communities have had to break down the ceilings all the time. They're breaking the glass ceiling all the time. And so what that does throughout your life is it doesn't make you weaker. It makes you stronger. Because you go, oh, here we go again. Oh, yeah, I lived through that one. Oh, I can live through that one. I can live through that again. So we're now at a midlife, and there's research asked 2,000 women all over the country what their attitudes were. And 55% said they felt very independent and confident. And in terms of what women wear and how they look, almost 50%, 47%, said that they buy things that they want to if they want to feel sexy, but they buy it for themselves. They do not buy it to attract men. They do not buy it for their husbands. They do not buy it to agree with society's rules. And you ask those questions 40 years ago, or even 20 years ago, and the percentages would have been very different. So now we have all these younger women supporting us, and it's fabulous. I think it's amazing. I love what I see online about what younger women are saying and doing, and younger men too, because the vast majority of those younger men are supportive of women. So I'm here to celebrate all of that and to talk about it fearlessly and without apology.
I would imagine if you're fearless at 65, you were fearless at 25. Yeah. Because you had quite a, not the easiest upbringing. Stuff happened, didn't it? And your mum in particular was a heroic figure, but it can't have been 100% easy for you.
No, growing up was unusual. I was born in 1960, and my parents had been married a while and had already had my brother and sister. And then when my mum was pregnant with me, my father had an affair with a young lady. And so my mum left him. So she moved back up to where she was from, which was North Wales, in a little town called Prestatyn. And that's where we grew up. And she had 5 part-time jobs. And we grew up in abject poverty. Yeah, 4 of us to a room and all of that, a dream. But we didn't know we were poor. That makes sense. And then we were brought up as Catholics in a little local school in Rhyl. And, you know, we weren't allowed to go to communion. My mum wasn't allowed to go to communion. We were the only kids from a divorced family in the school and so on. But there was a lot of kindness. Society said, and the church said at the time, you know, we were outcasts. But actually, there was a lot of kindness. Teachers were wonderful. Nobody treated us differently in school. So we didn't know any different. And I think growing up in North Wales was also unusual because there isn't much snobbery in North Wales. There certainly wasn't then. Because there wasn't a lot of wealth. So everyone was sort of on the same level, I would say. So we weren't conscious of the differences.
Okay.
And then I went to the secondary school, and then my mum remarried my stepfather, who was, I find this interesting. My father was in the Dutch resistance, Mr. Vorderman, mm-hmm. and he came to this country, welcomed in the UK. And my stepfather was an Italian who obviously fought on the opposite side in the war. And he was a prisoner of war in Wales. So I had them from both sides, wow. You know, which was wonderful. But he was amazing, my stepfather. I didn't know my father at all, but my stepfather became my dad. But my mum kept leaving him. So it was quite sort of disturbed childhood, I suppose, in some ways. But I was very grateful for it. It's given me tremendous independence.
Yes. Well, and you are, you're just very much yourself, aren't you? I mean, we'll talk about some of your skill set is extraordinary. I mean, I really want to know what it takes to be a private pilot. You mention a lack of class division and snobbery in North Wales, but you went to Cambridge.
Yeah.
And I imagine... Yeah. You must have felt like an outlier there, did you?
Well, no, I tell you, it was very odd. So growing up in North Wales, I used to go to nightclubs, naughty girl, from when I was 15 with my mates. And we used to go to clubs in Manchester and do all sorts of different things. And so I was very streetwise. And I was 17 when I went to Cambridge because I'd gone up a year in school. And there was a wonderful Don called Mr. Green, who our college had only just, we're celebrating 50 years actually of girls in the college this year. And I was in the third year when they took girls, and Sydney Sussex College, which I love. And I'm now an honorary fellow there. So I'm very happy. I go there a lot. And it was, so I turned up in a Porsche with my boyfriend at the time. And he drove me down and dropped me off. And I was there in my thigh-length leather boots and my tight jeans, as was the fashion back then. And all these other kids, not all, but most of the other kids were from private schools, which were girls' schools, as you know, or boys' schools back then. And well, they were just running around doing whatever they were doing because they hadn't seen boys or girls before. And I thought, good grief, I couldn't believe how it was. They were, I didn't feel inferior. If anything, I felt older than them. I felt like, ooh, really? That's how it's done, is it? So I didn't suffer in that way, I don't think.
No, okay. And you were studying engineering, which is also notable because just not many girls were studying engineering then. And I'm afraid, actually, it's still the case that not enough girls study it.
Yeah, it's a lot better as everything, as you know, have improved. Everything has improved for women generally. But when I went, I've been told that I was one of the first 50 to 100 girls who'd ever studied engineering at Cambridge. It was that new. So we got lost in it. But I was known as, my nickname there was Boots Vorderman, because everyone wore jeans and everyone wore a cagoule. And I refused to wear jeans. So I used to wear my thigh-length leather boots literally every day to the department. And that was my nickname, Boots Vorderman. The lecturer's called Boots in. And I just thought, I don't know. I don't know why I did it. I just thought, I am not wearing a cagoule and jeans. It's not what we do.
I've got to say, I was at university around the same time as you, Carol, and I was wearing a cagoule and jeans. But there we go. Nor did I arrive, by the way, did you say a Porsche? Your boyfriend dropped you off in a Porsche? Wow. I mean, you are just the epitome of cool. So really, you were never going to be an engineer. Showbiz had to be your calling, surely.
Well, I loved engineering. I worked underground on Europe's largest construction site then in Snowdonia. 2,000 men underground and me.
What was that project?
And it's now called the Electric Mountain. Back then it was called the Dynoric Pump Storage Scheme. So it was a lake at the top, lake at the bottom. And it was it's the only battery on a national grid level that we have. So when supply is high and demand is low, the water from the bottom lake is pumped up to the top lake. When demand is high and supply of electricity is low, it's released through 6 turbines in the machine hall, and it generates enough for a city, basically, for about 6 hours. And it's wonderful. It was effectively a battery stored, and the energy was stored in the form of water in these lakes. And I just found it fantastically interesting. I genuinely loved it. But again, it was when it came to the milk round, you know, when you were applying for jobs, and I wanted to be what's called a mud logger. So I wanted to travel to Indonesia and look for oil and all of this. Women weren't allowed. Then I thought, I want to be a fighter pilot. Women weren't allowed. Oh, what am I going to do now? I ended up, my first job was being a supervisor in a frozen pea factory in Lowestoft. Not quite as glamorous, but I loved that too. So now I'm very happy, with that period of time in my life. And in fact, I met another engineer when I worked underground. He was a bit older than me, from Leeds. And so I used to go up to Leeds to see him every fortnight. And that was when, after I graduated, Mum left my stepfather again. And I said, I know in Leeds we can afford to buy a house together, Mum, because the houses are so cheap. So we moved to Leeds, and it was the first time she'd ever been to Yorkshire when we moved in. I was 21, and 3 weeks later she saw an article about this new show called Countdown.
Yeah.
It was going to be made at Yorkshire Television in Leeds, a mile from where we'd moved to. She wrote the letter, forged my signature, and sent it in. And that's where it all came.
And so begins a showbiz fairy tale. And in some ways, it has been a fairy tale. But you're notable because you've always been pretty outspoken. You were never just the lovely lady in the corner, were you? And you never wanted to be.
No, I don't think I ever wanted to be. I think because of stuff that had happened earlier on in my life, where, not necessarily people in North Wales, but you know, I began to see how the system works, you know, the system of government in this country, the system of how people with no money were kept down and so on. And I obviously rebelled against that. And I just, when you've had nothing, you've nothing to lose, because you think, I can survive with nothing. So I am going to fight. So I've always been a bit of a fighter. I'm actually quite nice to be around, though, Jane. I rail against things that I believe are wrong in society. So that's where I do my shouting. I don't do it in the house.
Yes, and it has both helped you along life's showbiz highway and also hindered your progress at times, hasn't it? Because the BBC biffed you off because of your, I mean, pretty outspoken views about the last government on social media.
Yeah, oh yes. But I am the only presenter to have been sacked twice in my career by the BBC. And I'm most proud of it. I've got a badge made saying that, sacked twice by the BBC.
What was your first sacking? What caused that?
First sacking was in the mid-90s. And I always had a plan B. So I had my own TV production company. I had about 30, 35 employees then. We made revision videos for the national curriculum and the Times Tables and GCSEs, because they'd only just come online, really. And they were sold in Woolworths and Smiths and all that. So I always had plan B. And then obviously I was on Countdown. Countdown was was Channel 4's biggest show for many, many years. And the BBC approached me and said, will you host Tomorrow's World? We've done this focus group research. 77% of people asked, said that they would like you to be the new host of Tomorrow's World.
God, what was wrong with the other 23%? Blimey.
I said to my mama at the time, John, I was with for decades, I said, oh, that's nice. That's really nice. I'd really love to do that. So I went back to them and then they said, this is the money. I went, okay. But she's got to give up Countdown. I went, oh, they're having a laugh. I've been paid four times more to do Countdown than that. No. Just got that very nicely and saying no. So we went back and said no. So then they came back and, it goes backwards and forwards. Mm. So in the end, I said yes. And obviously continued on with Countdown as well. Then they started the pressure, which was, we want you to be our biggest female name in prime time, but you just have to give up Countdown. So I'm not giving up Countdown, so can you just back off with that? That's not happening. So I'd been doing adverts for Ariel washing powder for a while already, and I had a phone call, and my manager said, Marmaduke Hussey, who was the then chairman of the BBC, his wife had seen you on this advert and said, this girl shouldn't be doing, she was a lady in waiting, I think, to Queen Elizabeth. This girl shouldn't be doing adverts. Lots of arguments going on. They sacked me. So I fought back. I was writing in the Sun and whoever would let me write for them. And they cancelled all my BBC shows. I had a column in the Radio Times. And I thought, thank God I've got plan B. So that was that. And then in the summer, so that was in March, in the summer I had a phone call. We're thinking of offering you your job back, right? So, after I'd stopped laughing, I said, are you serious? Yeah, I was serious. I have a meeting with the editor. Now we want to offer you your job back. I went, that's really nice. You know, I really will consider it. And then he said, this is the killer. He said, but if you tell anyone that we've offered you your job back, we will deny it. I thought, well, stuff you. So I played along and then I rang my manager after and I said, right, this is what he said. So what I want you to do is string them along until a week before transmission as though I'm going to sign and then tell them to stuff off. So I said, I can't work with that. And so that's what happened.
You are a very, very bad woman, Carol. I'm astonished. I'm absolutely disgusted. But your most recent sacking was because you were slagging off the Tories. I just wonder, where do you think we're at as a country right now? How much sympathy actually do you have for Sir Keir Starmer as he attempts to navigate a path through the Trump quagmire?
Well, there's that. But before Trump got in, obviously, he had, what was it, about 5 months before then? And I couldn't believe that. I don't vote Labour, by the way. but I wanted a change of government. And obviously back then, not now, 18 months later, but back then it was a two-party system, more or less. You're either going to have Labour or Tory. And as you know, we set up the Stop the Tories.vote tactical voting website. Best for Britain had theirs. And between us, we had over 6 million people who typed in their postcodes to see who they should vote for in their constituency, the first past the post system, to not get a Tory. And those 6 million led to, hugely led to, the shallow but large majority that Labour had.
Mm.
And then we sat back and thought, yes, finally, you know, we're going to have a new system and all these things they promised. Winter fuel payment. And what are you doing? You know, I mean, no one is more disappointed with what's happened in those 18 months than us at Stop the Tories dot vote. I still prefer them, Labour, to the Tories, but it's just so shocking. And that was before Donald Trump became president in his second term. So there is a quagmire, but I think Starmer's problems are much deeper than that.
You're right to say, of course, that it's no longer a two-party race and that Reform really do appear to be... Well, they're certainly ahead in the polls. I mean, I was absolutely captivated yesterday by Nigel Farage and his little bit of trouble with the parliamentary watchdog in terms of some of his outside earnings not being registered in time. And Mr. Farage yeah. actually said that the reason for this was that his staff hadn't got round to it and, quotes, "I don't do computers." What do you think of that? He's 61, by the way.
I think Nigel Farage is a grifter. I think he would be the worst thing that could happen to this country. And I would do everything in my power possible to not get a Reform government. That's what I think of Farage.
So you probably revive your old campaign again, but call it something else.
We're already at it. We're doing it with local elections. And it's interesting, since May last year, Reform have lost a lot of councillors to other parties. This is in the council by-elections. And, of course, in Caerphilly, I'm Welsh, they lost that by-election when all the national media was saying, oh, yeah, Reform are likely to get an MP in Wales and so on. And now in the polls in Wales, because we're only 4 months off the Senedd, the Welsh Assembly elections, which is proportional representation, Reform are way down in the polls. Plaid Cymru, our Welsh Independent Party, is leading by a long way.
So, Carol Vorderman on manoeuvres again. It was interesting to talk to her, and she'll be interested in this news, breaking news, just in the last couple of minutes, actually. The former Labour MP, well, he is still a Labour MP as I speak, Labour MP and former Health Minister Andrew Gwynne has confirmed he is indeed going to stand down as an MP. There have been rumours all day about this. He said in a post on social media that he will indeed be resigning. And this, of course, potentially opens the door for one Andy Burnham, the Mayor of Greater Manchester, to attempt at least to return to Westminster as an MP. So watch this space. More with John Pienaar in about 5 minutes' time. It's Times Radio. It is now 6 minutes to four.
Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald on Times Radio Breakfast with Visit Scotland. Discover Times Radio's essential weekend briefing, where intelligent conversation meets incisive analysis of all the big stories making the headlines. Exploring the wider news agenda with guests from across politics, business, the arts and more. Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald on Times Radio Breakfast. Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 with Visit Scotland. Start your story in Scotland with visitscotland.com/winter.
Listen at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
Something unexpected has arrived in Happy Meal. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Hello Kitty and friends are teaming up for the ultimate collab. Joining your little ones on a fun-fueled adventure. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 2nd of February, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
What is it that makes a Fred Olsen cruise feel like no other? Perhaps it's the awe-inspiring destinations that will stay with you forever. Or our ships that are small in size, but big in character. It could be the wonderful people you meet along the way. Or our extraordinary crew. Maybe it's all of these things together. But if you really want to know what a Fred Olsen cruise feels like, there's only one way to find out.
The State of It is the new podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. Join political heavyweights Stephen Swinford, Caroline Wheeler, Gabriel Pogrund and Patrick Maguire.
Only a very small handful of the people that I go out for lunch with will actually want to have a glass of wine. Nigel Farage is definitely one of them.
No party loyalty, just the inside track on the decisions and policymakers that shape your life. The State of It is available to listen now on The Times Radio app or from your preferred podcast provider.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix Kitchen and Bathroom Sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
Well, we've been asking you for your proudest moment of the week for a chance to win a £250 Wix voucher as part of our Wix Proud as a Peacock Awards. Some interesting entries today. Thank you all very much. It is just a lovely, just a dose of good stuff at the end of the working week here on the Times Radio Afternoon Show. We do love hearing your positive stories. I'm very, very tempted by, you know, it's very difficult to make a decision. I don't know. I just don't know. There's Heather who says, I'm proud as a peacock because my upstairs neighbour has gone on holiday to Australia and decided it would be a great chance to have new bathrooms and kitchens fitted. I'm as proud as a peacock because even though I could swear an earthquake was occurring most days and the sound barrier has definitely been broken on several occasions, I have refrained from saying anything at all to the builders involved and I've just been hitting the vodka bottle a little earlier. Mutter, mutter, says Heather. Oh, Heather, I very nearly gave you the award. And I am sorry for you. That must have been such a frustrating week. And how dare your upstairs neighbour go away while all this takes place? Try not to drink too much, although I appreciate it probably is immensely annoying for you. I'm sorry, Heather, you nearly won, but not quite, because the prize is going this week to Alison, who says, I'd like to nominate myself for the Wix Proud as a Peacock Awards because I had a moment recently that made me feel genuinely proud. And this is what this whole competition is all about. After months of putting it off, I finally tackled a big home project on my own, sanding, painting and fixing up a tired old room that I'd been avoiding for ages. It wasn't perfect, but standing back at the end and seeing what I'd achieved gave me a real proud as a peacock moment. It reminded me that small wins count and sometimes doing something you didn't think you could is worth celebrating. Thank you for giving people a chance to share these little victories. It's such a lovely part of the week. Well, Alison, you are so on message. You've ticked every box there. How can we not award you the prize? Congratulations to you. We'll be in touch with to get your details, in fact, and to make sure you get the voucher. But rest assured, those vouchers will be coming your way very soon. And then you can start on another room. Go for it. If you'd like the chance to win a £250 Wix voucher, send us your proudest moment of the week on WhatsApp 0333 003 2353, or you can email janeandfee@times.radio.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix Kitchen and Bathroom Sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
John's about to take over, but it's just worth saying that Elon Musk has made a surprise appearance at Davos this afternoon. And about 10 minutes ago, he said, I'm often asked, are there aliens amongst us? And I say, I am one, but they don't believe me. If anyone would know if there were aliens among us, it would be me. Reassuring stuff from Elon Musk there. I'll pass the news baton over now to John Beanoff, and he'll run with it until 7. Have a good weekend. Take care.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Jane. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar with Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. Andrew Gwynn has announced that he'll stand down as an MP for medical reasons, potentially paving a way for Andy Burnham's return to Westminster. And President Zelensky confirms that Ukrainian officials will join US and Russian counterparts for talks in the UAE tomorrow. And coming up, a new world order is being arranged before our very eyes. Donald Trump setting up his board of peace, while Volodymyr Zelensky calls out Europe for failing to act against Putin. We're going to be talking at some length with experts, including a former top-ranking US general and Lord Sedrill, former National Security Advisor and head of the civil service. And we're seeing the beginning of Andy Burnham's pathway back to Westminster, perhaps, as a Labour MP stands down. I'll get the latest on what may be the next domestic headache for the Prime Minister.
This is Times Radio.
And now the news with Andy Hayes.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. There may be a way for the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, to return to the House of Commons. Andrew Gwynn, a former health minister who lost the Labour whip over offensive WhatsApp messages, has announced he's standing down as an MP. He represents Gorton and Denton in Greater Manchester. His majority at last year's general election was just under 13,500. More details from The Times' assistant political editor, Jerry Scott.
We do know there has been plenty of reporting about Andy Burnham looking for a potential way back to Westminster, potentially in order to challenge Keir Starmer for the leadership. There are still a lot of hurdles that he would need to pass in order to do that. He'd have to be selected as a candidate. He'd have to win. These are all pretty big mountains to climb. But what it does do is potentially clear that way for him to return to the House of Commons.
Volodymyr Zelensky says the first trilateral meeting between the US, Russia and Ukraine will take place tomorrow and on Saturday in the UAE. The Ukrainian president says documents to end the war are almost ready. Britain, meanwhile, has helped French forces to seize a sanctioned Russian oil tanker in the Mediterranean. Zelensky has told European leaders in Davos that much more like that needs to be done.
Russian oil is being transported right along European shores. That oil funds the war against Ukraine. That oil helps destabilize Europe. So Russian oil must be stopped and confiscated and sold for Europe's benefit. If Putin has no money, there is no war for Europe.
Sir Keir Starmer is hosting the Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen at Chequers. Donald Trump has withdrawn his threat of tariffs if countries, including Britain, fail to back him over Greenland. The Prime Minister is claiming some of the credit for that.
In terms of recent developments and the withdrawal of the threat of tariffs, I see that as a reflection of pragmatism, common sense and sticking to our values and our principles. The hard yards now finding a way, better way forward on the issue that we all agree on, which is security in the Arctic.
A first group of migrants has arrived at a military training camp in East Sussex. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, says 27 were moved to the former barracks at Crowborough earlier this week. They all came across the channel on small boats. Local people have accused Mahmood of riding roughshod over community concerns. Liz Hurley has alleged the publisher of the Daily Mail tapped her landlines and placed microphones on her windows to get stories. She's one of seven claimants, including Prince Harry, who accused Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering, something it denies. Netflix has announced a documentary about the investigation into convicted child killer Lucy Letby. It'll feature never-before-seen footage and is out on February the 4th. And vampire horror movie Sinners has set a new Oscars record with 16 nominations. Jessie Buckley's been nominated for her first Academy Award for her role in Hamlet. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. John Pienaar at Drive on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. Another world-changing, history-making day. Or, if you like, it's Thursday. Today, there is a new Board of Peace, chaired for life by Donald Trump, and plainly designed to place him at the head of an alternative United Nations. Today, President Trump's been sitting down with Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky in Davos, while Trump's envoys had a scheduled meeting with Vladimir Putin in Moscow. We'll have more on those meetings in a moment. Is there any real sign, then, of progress, any progress towards peace in Ukraine? Well, Volodymyr Zelensky has just warned world leaders and NATO partners that they can't be sure that America will join the fight if Russia invades NATO territory. Europeans, he said, were hoping that America would be there for them if Putin struck.
NATO exists thanks to belief that the United States will act, that it will not stand aside and will help. But what if it doesn't?
Well, so much for trust in the Western alliance. Doesn't sound like Zelensky's expecting Putin to back away from his demands to grab more of Ukraine, does it? And as for Trump, A Ukraine ceasefire would surely help his claim to be the leading light for peace in the world. A breakthrough in Ukraine or progress in Gaza might even add a bit of credibility to his position as chairman of the Board of Peace, with its membership loaded with autocrats and strongmen leaders, and at least one wanted for alleged war crimes, too, if Putin joins in. But let's be realistic, because the signs are that there's no sign of a breakthrough in Ukraine any more than there's a sign of a breakthrough towards a long-term peace in the Middle East, which, as I say, was the point of the Board of Peace before it turned into a vehicle for President Trump's ambition to rebuild the world order in his own image. I wonder, are you hopeful of a breakthrough in Ukraine? Do you see the Board of Peace achieving very much? Tell me what you think. Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times, or a tweet to At Times Radio. Now, coming up later on today's show, EU leaders are meeting in Brussels this evening. They're going to be taking stock of President Trump's obvious climb down on his demand to own Greenland and discussing how to deal with him in future. Will they be standing up to his tactical bullying and to his threats in the future? And here at home, a Labour MP is retiring from the House of Commons. There will be a vacant seat. So is this the start of Andy Burnham's push to get into the House of Commons and push Keir Starmer out of Downing Street? Tell me your thoughts. Send me a text. Send me a tweet. Keen to hear what you are thinking. Firstly, earlier on today, President Zelensky used his Davos speech to deliver a sobering warning to NATO and to Europe.
No one has really seen the alliance in action. If Putin decides to take Lithuania or strike Poland, who will respond? Who will respond? Right now, NATO exists thanks to belief that the United States will act, that it will not stand aside and will help. But what if it doesn't?
Well, Zelensky bluntly said that Europe likes to talk and not act. He added a new world order could only come from action. Earlier this morning, the German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, had a similar warning about the reshaping of the world stage.
We have entered a time of great power politics. The international order of the past three decades, anchored in international law, has always been imperfect. Today, its very foundations have been shaken. This new world of great powers is being built on power, on strength, and when it comes to it, on force.
Chancellor Merz of Germany. President Trump, of course, earlier was hosting that signing ceremony for his new Board of Peace.
We can do numerous other things. Once this board is completely formed, we can do pretty much whatever we want to do, and we'll do it in conjunction with the United Nations. You know, I've always said the United Nations has got tremendous potential, has not used it.
So that was Donald Trump. So let's start then with Karin von Hippel, the former senior State Department official in Washington, who has